I'd like to thank Tim and Alex for inviting me to make this podcast. The poems you're going to hear were recorded at a reading given last summer as part of a local reading series called New and Nearby. The poems were chosen to fit the series, but there are poems here from my new chapbook and from my older one. We've edited the recording so as to give you maximum poetry in the allotted time, but I hope we've still preserved the flavor of a live reading.
I think it was Kay Ryan, the current poet laureate, who said that poems often start for her the way pearls do, with an irritation. And that's certainly true for me, and an excellent source of poetic irritation is our two offspring. I owe this next poem to being taken places I didn't want to go, wasn't ready to go, didn't enjoy, and got poems out of. Tattoo and piercing parlor. Trance and techno thudding against my eardrums. Out of breath from climbing, I get my bearings slowly here. A second floor retail walk-up, not in my safe zone. Look, the reddened arm of a skinhead sales clerk, wreathed with bloody thorns of a fresh tattooing. Shrine-like dimness, there in the jewelry cases. What am I seeing? Body parts in effigy. They confound me. Suede-skinned, gray-black models of navels, eyebrows, nipples, vulvas, penises. Now I see it. These are the places piercings go, those wounds that demand attention. Glass encased, Sebastian-like, multi-studded, jewel-encrusted, icons of modern martyrs, vulnings in secret. Dancing on the point of a thorny question. Daughter smiling, skin-headed sales clerk smiling, all things consummated. I grope for answers, stumbling toward daylight. All this piercing, who is the God who asks it? Whose young purgatorio might be shortened, lightened by these penances? Can I find here something redeeming? Flight. He lies there till the last split nanosecond. My son, who needs to catch an early plane, until I feel like screaming. Curled like a grub, he pulls the pillow over his head again, mock victim of my vigilant oppression. Just chill, he says. I've got this down to a science. This slapdash dressing for security checks. The pull-on pants, no belt. The slip-on footwear, sandals at 20 degrees outside. I cringe. He'll need to eat. I offer a couple of donuts. Waving them off, he grabs a box of crackers and looks for something to read. With hesitation, I hand him this morning's paper, its science section hideous with plagues, and its front page filled with the sounds of firstborns dying somewhere. He takes it casually, with a groggy smile. A ride through blue-black darkness. At the airport, a crush of cars, of rushed goodbyes, of couples embracing, of impatient blasts of horn. Lucky to get a hug, I let him go. Curbside, he shakes the local snow from his feet, prophet of his own risk-taking way. On the seat beside me, the paper he's forgotten. I think about the way he'll stand in line, loins girt with sagging elastic, the tall staff of ski bag in his hand, his feet in sandals. scarfing crackers in haste like one who flees. He shoulders his bags. The glass doors part like seas. After the divorce, I hold a yard sale. They come in slowly, poker-faced, such laying bare of earthly failings, spread on folding tables, draped on porch railings, is sad and awkward, and they pass eyes down before the bargain bins and clothing racks that now confess our venial sins. The treadmill, bought in a gust of hope that fell, predictably, becalmed. The set of free weights, the jump rope, plastic embalmed. Enthusiasms failed. And Lord, what hubris in these color schemes. Which idiot was overfond of whites and creams? What germ of evil in our past infected this computer's sheath? Once beige, now with a yellowish cast like rotten teeth. The screw loose and the weak-linked chain. Nothing in literature or art so bluntly explicates the line, things fall apart. They lie there, derelict, unhaggled, wasted, remaindered, on the skids, redemptionless. But now a gaggle of college kids has blown in on a gale of laughter, talking trash. May youth forgive the sins age will no longer suffer. May these bones live. Airheads. These past few days, our local air displays its moves with floating fuzz. Cottonwood seed scintillulas accost my nostrils, haunt my hair. They dance like Salome. They tease with half-cracked helices of flight. Waffling at each offered breeze, fluffhead flex, electron light ride downdrafts like adagio rain. The next half-second, loft again, jumping at every chance to shirk the settling down, the rooted work. Bad moves, but just how I behave. The weighty efforts that might save my soul, my health, my solvency, I balk at, loving, faddish stuff. The fizz of tabloid and TV, light music, frothy poetry, composing life from airhead fluff. No hundredfold of yield is found in seed that never hits the ground, so I take comfort when I see white seed fuzz piling up in grass, brought down to earth by modest mass, a ratio that pleases me, some gravitas, much levity. Front page photograph, Memorial Day. Do nothing day, still cool morning. In bare feet on the concrete stoop, I pick the paper up, uncurl it, and see, before a grave's white cross, a phrase comes to me, prostrate with grief. A woman lies face down in the grass, forehead resting on folded arms. I glance at the caption, fiancé, and my thinking shifts, and my face warms. The shoulders bare, the long legs parted, the last embrace. Should I be seeing this act of intimacy thwarted, this woman 6 feet above position? Suddenly now I find myself firing my hard, unanswered questions at air, while a stubborn cardinal sings his turf war song like a car alarm. I pray for wild, impossible things. Showings. Those months when we drift through houses, dreaming and vague like air through the August windows, what glamours were cast around us by the molding's ogival curves, by the darkened heart of the oak and the sheen of woodwork. What old world charms were recited? For certainly we were spellbound in deep designs, saltbox, colonial, foursquare, concealed from our rapt attention. Our agent, her lacquered, smiling, changeless, took pains to show us the patterned surface, part image, part invocation of faces out of our childhoods, kissed at the end of a day-long drive in summer, of love that demands no labor. We stood in the fragrant half-light of wrapped verandas, heady with trellised roses, yet never caught wind of a season when clouds of hydrangea blossom must be pruned hard, exposing the peeling lattice and the cracked foundation behind it, and walls must be finally opened to ancient pipes where under a flowered paper the gas was hissing its secrets. Suburban Samsara. Season finale. Last fall, the street was flaked in yellow, flecked with sheep flame, leaf gold layering over the lawns. The garden Buddhas sat bare-bellied, navel-deep in a dreamed nirvana, almost conceding, not all is suffering. Arid this summer. After, when air chilled and the days damped down, cheerless, small color came, the crabbed rust brown, the dull dry green. No gold this go-round, wealth we waited for, only the work, the raking bent, the wrenched back. And we, the gullible, get what we get, gold in one year, rust in another, and always, always, the empty branches, their iron angles scraped on the sky. Saturday edition. Page one, above the fold, the world in flames. A luxury hotel gapes like a sore. In mammoth type, the headlines yell the names of prophets stoking hells of holy war. In business, meanwhile, there is calm discussion of sales rates for the sexy underclothes so pitched by Victoria's Secret and a fashion for surgical revision of the nose. It isn't news to those who sell the paper. Their readers can take only so much hell. They proffer me the surgeon and the draper as pastures where my bovine brain may dwell, ignoring while it chews on this confection the screams of children from the other section. And one of the most pleasing things to translate in Old English is the riddles of the Exeter book. You all have the thing in front of you, and you've already peeked at the answer, but if there's anybody who has not, see if you can guess what this is. The solution is the speaker of the poem. I'm what men want. In wide searches, I was hauled from the forests, the fortress cliff heights, the dales, the downs. By day, a waggling of wings in the breeze buzzed me away to a sheltering roof. Then a rude fellow bunged me in a barrel. A time passed. bang! Now binder in stealth and striker with strength. I'm yanking them down, the young men, the old. He'll tumble to this who takes me on. He's spoiling to finish flat on his spine if he doesn't quit this foolishness quickly. Stripped of his strength, stammering, reckless, he'll grasp that he's lost it, his grip on his thoughts, his fists, his footing. Now find me a name, me, who so master men on Middle Earth that even in daylight they're dazed with the blow. And you can figure out that it's alcoholic, I think. A meditation on dactylic hexameter. This is dactylic hexameter. This is the meter I learned about back when I first studied Virgil, much longer ago than I'll tell you. I tell of a lesson that failed. I sing of a student who stumbled. This, even this, one day will be helpful for us to remember. That's what the poet said, anyway. Think of a scratchy recording, a 33 RPM relic, and under the scratches and crackles, a basso declaiming Evangeline. This is the forest primeval, the murmuring pines and the hemlocks. That was to show us the meter of Arma Virumque Cano, and beating it out on the table, the hand of an elderly teacher, her finger joints lumped and arthritic. Think of old Longfellow's poem, unread now for so many decades. Think of old classrooms, old desks, old textbooks with fray-cornered covers. Feel the great age of the Latin and all this antiquity pressing on us who were girls of 16. Soothing old rhythms and sounds, but the road where they led me dead-ended. English is different from Latin, and stresses are different from long marks. Scattered and careless, I fumbled the Latin idea of duration. Lord, how I cringe when I think of the ways I misscanned the Aeneid, misunderstanding the sound of it. A wonder it happens at all that young people learn from old epics. So many ways of mishearing the rustle of papery voices. Still, there are fragments that stick. We look for them later and find them. Tears of things. Now that I've shed them, the line that most comes to me lately. Memory speaking in dactyls. Medieval. Fortuna rules us both. We're both unhappy. Someone fell ill, and so I have this course to teach. I should be glad for this first crack, but bristle at the absence of control. You, too, feel like a pawn of random events. Your credit count, your schedule, your last name, the prodding of advisors. Neither of us planned on intro to lit of the Middle Ages. But here we both are, hauling ourselves to class at 8, 3 times a week. God knows I've tried to woo you, to show you how it's often spring in Middle English, wintertime in old, and why in so hard a time someone took pains to string together words for singing's sake. And pains is the proper word. It was labora and ora, too. The calves slaughtered for vellum, the skinning, scraping, chalking, scoring with lines, the cutting of pens from quills. Pain is the word for what it cost. For the years the words have waited for you. You, who are always painfully there, hard at work, ignoring the four-stress line and the notes of Sumer Isi Kumen in. You make a point of filling classroom space near horizontal, legs stretched front, head back, arms folded as if to make a narrow target for the babble I pour over you, as if to aim it right between my eyes, your boredom, with low-tech words in a language you don't speak. And the last blow is this, your final exam, in which over and over you call the course medieval literature. Yes, I suppose for you that is the word. We both are learning. In future, I expect I'll be more guarded, teaching the poems, holding back the heart. You will claim your paper, mild civilities will be exchanged, and then you'll lope away, a sad C-minus in your grip, ensuring we're done. It's mid-December. Snow will fall. Hrim and hrith. But no one says that now, since this is the sphere of time beneath the moon, where everything must change, and where the poems evaporate like hoarfrost in the snow. Checking the funeral musician's schedule. Start doing funerals and you notice it. The time of year the old people decide they've lived enough, that death might be more friendly than winter is. Some go outside to meet it. They toss the snow from walks in reckless swoops till their hearts bank and dive, and then the sirens call us to muttered prayer. Mostly it's men who get this easy out, who cheer themselves right to the end with reasons to be, to do. They're women cursed by common sense, hang on, caged in their houses, living on crumbs of care. Their houses keep them alive, and their houses kill them. Rooms more and more resist the readying for visits that rarely come. A room at a time, they fill with the useless things that will not stop, singing the litanies of the dead and absent, till living shrivels to a room or two. A few clothes, dishes, everything hand-washed, warm water the last solace where the drafts insinuate in every uncaulked crack to say, give up, dear. I don't know how long persuasion takes. I do know where it ends. There's nothing for it but to sing, although my aging mezzo sinks more every year. I curse the cold and salt the icy steps, pray at the wakes, and sing the funerals. Asparagus. God of Roman gardens, obscene Priapus, is that you? Now risen in green and purple, thick-stalked rigor, here in the bed prepared for old-fashioned roses. Years ago I lusted for kitchen gardens here, and trenched and phosphated, setting rootstocks deep, and then I grew in a new direction, longing for flowers. Ave, old survivor, both vis and vir, old force, green fuse still driving among the blossoms, heedless of my changes of heart and hortus, phallic as ever, heartless, though, to bobbit you off for cooking. One alone, poor godhead, will never serve us, hungry as we are for the primavera. Gardening's answer. Stand there still, oh vegetable love. Grow taller, soar and soften out to a ferny greenness, feathered open, branched to adorn these hoped-for armfuls of roses.